Welcome. You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the April 27, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. I'm Karen Wheeler, and today we will be reading the following main articles. Meet the Young Pirates Protecting the Ocean from Plastic Pollution, written by Dolores Katanik for the Environment section of Euronews.com. Dozens of bald eagles have died from bird flu, written by Sabrina Imbler for the Science section of the New York Times. Protected areas don't always benefit wildlife, global study finds, written by Patrick Greenfield for the Environment section of TheGuardian.org. And of course, if we have time, following up with miscellaneous articles. First up, meet the young pirates protecting the ocean from plastic pollution, by Dolores Katanik. A primary school program called Captain Fan Plastic is using storytelling, treasure hunts, and creative crafts to educate young children in South Africa about plastic waste. The program is the brainchild of Soapbox, based in Cape Town. It started in 2018, and since then, Captain Fan Plastic has been welcomed to more than 20 schools in South Africa and in the Netherlands. There are also e-books, audiobooks, an e-learning platform, and in-person programs where children are taught that plastic is treasure, not trash. Captain Fan Plastic facilitator Yanga Gesea shares a joke that forms the basis of the initiative. Why do you think pirates are called pirates? Because they roar. It helps to articulate the children's important messages associated with plastic waste. We are able to take this initiative into schools to show little pirates in primary schools, in particular to the ages of 7 to 12 years old, that they can so that they can refuse, reduce, reuse, repurpose, and recycle plastic. Our audacious goal is to reach 175,000 kids around the world, says Gesea. Africa is choking on plastic. More than 17 million tons of waste are generated by sub-Saharan Africa every year, but only 12% of plastic waste is recycled. It is estimated that the plastic entering our oceans could triple to 29 million tons by 2040. To help communities throughout sub-Saharan Africa prevent plastic waste from entering the marine environment, the Afra Plastics Challenge has been set up by Innovation Foundation Nesta Challenges. It is being funded by the Government of Canada. They have just announced 30 semi-finalists in the challenge, including VR storytelling and community education programs. Captain Fan Plastic is one of the selected few. Three winners will be chosen in March 2023, receiving nearly €300,000 or £250,000 each to expand their programs and inspire change in behavior around plastics. If we win, I think we want to make an animation, says Gesea. The program has already published two books about the legends of Captain Fan Plastic, and a third one could be on the way too, with the help of the awards. The funds from Afroplastics Challenge can help us scale our program outside of trying to get to new countries and new partners on board, she adds. Dozens of bald eagles have died from bird flu. The H5N1 strain of avian influenza is spreading among many raptors and wild birds, including our national bird. By Sabrina Imbler. With millions of chickens on commercial poultry farms sickened and dying from a highly virulent strain of avian flu in recent months, it might have escaped notice that some of the nation's most stunning wild birds have also been felled by the virus. The virus has taken an unusual toll on raptors or birds of prey, including more than 36 bald eagles. Because the spring is nesting season, some experts are worried that avian flu may pose a serious threat to the bird's potential offspring. In Minneapolis, a beloved family of great horned owls living by Lake Nokomis has died of avian flu. In Florida, black vultures have been infected. And in Georgia, 3 infected bald eagles were found dead in coastal counties. The H5N1 strain of the highly pathogenic avian influenza virus, which is widespread in Europe, was first reported in North America in the Canadian province of Newfoundland and Labrador in December 2021. By mid-January, the virus had infected an American widgeon and blue-winged teal in South Carolina, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Waterfowl, which are natural hosts of avian flu, have been especially hard hit. The 763 reported wild bird infections, according to the USDA, include snow geese in North and South Dakota, northern shovelers in North Carolina, brown pelicans in Florida, mallards in Minnesota, and several unidentified ducks in Ohio. Bald eagles hunt living prey and scavenge carcasses, which offer a possible route of transmission for the virus. If the waterfowl are dying, then eagles can pick it up from eating those dead waterfowl, said Kristen Schuler, co-director of the Cornell Wildlife Health Lab. The USDA has reported 41 dead bald eagles infected with the virus since February, a number that does not include 2 more bald eagles that Dr. Schuler confirmed were infected in New York in late March. This month, bald eagles have been infected in Ohio, South Dakota, Illinois, Wisconsin, Vermont, Maine, and North Dakota. Bald eagles have long been considered a conservation success story. Populations were driven nearly to extinction by the synthetic insecticide DDT. In 1963, there were only 417 known nesting pairs. But decades of conservation efforts, along with a 1972 ban of DDT, allowed the species to recover and eventually be removed from Endangered Species Act protection in 2007. Despite this rebound, many bald eagles suffer from chronic lead poisoning. As the birds scavenge on hunted carcasses, they can ingest lead from ammunition, according to a paper published this year in the journal Science. This widespread long-term exposure stressed the resilience of bald eagle populations. According to a study published this year by Dr. Schuler and colleagues in the Journal of Wildlife Management, new threats to the species, such as wind turbines or a bird flu strain, could threaten its long-term success. The resilience of these animals was very close to the edge, Dr. Schuler said. If a few more breeding adults died, that could actually have a pretty big impact on the future growth of these populations. It is not yet clear how this bird flu will affect the species' recovery. I'm concerned it will be endemic, and there's already been reports of some recombination, which means there's this new strain mixing with some of the North American versions we have, and thus creating new viruses, Dr. Schuller said. We always worry about those. But it appears the virus will harm nesting success, the ability of a nest to produce at least one young bird capable of flight, among certain populations this year, according to a statement from the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. Aerial surveys of nesting bald eagles in 6 coastal counties in Georgia have revealed nest success was down 30% this year, according to the statement. Some wild birds infected with avian influenza can show no symptoms, but infection can also lead to neurological problems, which can make it difficult for a bird to fly or to right itself. At Back to the Wild, a rehabilitation center in Ohio, bald eagles believed to have bird flu appear unsteady on their feet and are unable to fly. Some have even had seizures. All are admitted with the same symptoms and pass away within hours of admission, said Heather Tuttle, director of the education at the center, adding that the rate of admission has started to slow down. Of the dozen birds brought into the center, none have survived. There is no effective treatment. Avian flu poses little threat to people, and no cases of H5N1 bird flu infection have been reported in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. People should avoid direct contact with wild birds and their feces, and hunters should avoid harvesting or handling wild birds that are sick or found dead. Hunters should also wash their hands with soap and water after touching game birds, and cook meat to an internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Some experts have advised people to take down bird feeders to reduce the spread of H5N1 in wild birds, but Dr. Schuller has not seen many birds that use feeders, such as songbirds, infected with a virus. It doesn't seem that this is a major source of potential transmission, she said. But bird feeders can still spread other pathogens and parasites, such as the bacteria that cause house finch eye disease, so it's very important to keep them clean. Instead, Dr. Schuller suggests maintaining vigilance about the spread of bird flu and reporting any unusual mortalities or birds that appear to have neurological issues. The better data we have on what's actually happening, the more we can figure it out, she said. Protected areas don't always benefit wildlife, global study finds. Study of wetland birds in national parks and other reserves shows that species-specific management is crucial to success. By Patrick Greenfield. National parks and other protected areas have had mixed success in conserving wildlife, according to the largest ever global study of their effects. Using wetland bird data from 1,506 protected areas around the world, scientists analyzed the trends of more than 27,000 populations and found that increased provision for the birds had not necessarily helped. Researchers said the study, published today in the journal Nature, has important implications for the movement to protect 30% of the earth for wildlife by the end of the decade. The results show that managing parks to protect species and their habitats is crucial, and that without such management, parks are more likely to be ineffective. We know that protected areas can prevent habitat loss, especially in terms of stopping deforestation, said lead author Dr. Hannah Wachope, of the Center for Ecology and Conservation at Exeter University. However, we have much less understanding of how protected areas help wildlife. Our study shows that while many protected areas are working well, many others are failing to have a positive effect. We need more focus on ensuring that areas are well managed to benefit biodiversity. Governments are currently negotiating this decade's targets to protect biodiversity, with dozens of countries signing up to a target to protect 30% of land and sea by 2030. While this study only looked at water birds, scientists said their abundance, ability to colonize and leave locations quickly, and the quality of data meant they were a good proxy for other wildlife. Scientists compared water bird population trends before protected areas were established with trends afterwards in 68 countries, and they also analyzed the trends of similar water bird populations inside and outside of protected areas. Much of the data was collected by volunteers. "We're not saying protected areas don't work," Wachop said. "The key point is that their impacts vary hugely, and the biggest thing this depends on is whether they're managed with species in mind. We can't just expect protected areas to work without appropriate management. It also appears that larger protected areas tend to be better than smaller ones." Co-author Julia Jones, a professor at Bangor University, said, "There are big pushes backed by the likes of Emmanuel Macron, Boris Johnson, and others to expand protected areas to cover 30% of the planet by 2030, but it's really important to know if these protected areas actually deliver or not. There are very few studies that look at whether protected areas effectively slow species declines or improve populations. It seems quite basic, but the reason for that is it's actually very difficult to do." She added, "This analysis gives really useful indications of how conservation can be improved to deliver better outcomes for species." Thomas Brooks, chief scientist at the International Union for Conservation of Nature, who was not involved with the research, said water birds were a good example of a group facing the consequences of human behaviors that drive biodiversity loss. "Water birds are extremely widely distributed. They move around the whole time and are highly migratory. They breed at high altitudes in Arctic tundra, wetlands, all the way through the rest of the world. They face lots of pressures at different stages in their life cycles, including the impacts of unsustainable harvest and of climate change," he said. He added that the study had important implications for conservation management. "For the first time in 4 years, a litter of red wolf pups was born in the wild," written by Dustin Jones for the science section of the New York Times. U.S. Fish and Wildlife staff in North Carolina welcomed a litter of 6 red wolf pups into the world earlier this week. It's the first time in 4 years that a pair of wild red wolves, a species teetering on the brink of extinction, gave birth to a litter in the wild. The newborn pups, 4 females and 2 males, were found in the Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge along the coast of northeastern North Carolina. Staff at the Red Wolf Recovery Program announced the positive news on Facebook last Thursday. "This new litter is the first wild-born litter of red wolves since 2018. This red wolf pair was formed through the combination of several management actions and the 2 red wolves subsequently following their natural instincts in pairing, establishing their territory, and mating," the post read. "Every generation yields a newborn hope for the red wolf, a cause for joy and celebration." Before settlers arrived in North America, red wolves thrived throughout the southeast U.S., from Florida to the Great Plains and the Ohio River Valley, according to National Conservation Organization Defenders of Wildlife. But through hunting, extermination, and the expansion of cities and towns, humans drove the species to near extinction. There were a mere 17 wolves left to save when the Endangered Species Act passed in 1973. Before 14 of the remaining 17 wolves were trapped and transferred into captivity, the handful of survivors lived across a small area of the Louisiana and Texas coast. The remaining wolves disappeared, Fish and Wildlife said, attributed to continued human persecution and a loss of habitat. The red wolf was declared extinct in the wild in 1980. Just 4 years later, there were 63 healthy red wolves in captivity, which were being prepared to release into the wild with hopes of giving the species a second chance. As part of the red wolf species survival plan, the Red Wolf Recovery Program said, more than 60 adult wolves were released into the Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge between 1987 and 1994. The following years, the wolves did what came naturally. They maintained territories, formed packs, and more importantly, began to breed. As other environmentalists marveled at the success of the Red Wolf Recovery Program, it became a model for reintroduction efforts of gray wolves, Mexican wolves, California condors, and the black-footed ferret. In 2012, the population reached a peak of 120. According to the Fish and Wildlife Service, this was the first time a large carnivore was brought back from extinction and reintroduced to the wild in the United States. But once again, humans threatened the handful of surviving wolves. Conservationists came to the wolves' aid once again in 2012 after one red wolf after another was shot and killed, having been mistaken for a coyote, according to a Southern Environmental Law Center news release. The North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission had recently approved a temporary rule allowing hunters to kill coyotes, which occasionally breed with the wolves, at night in the area where Red Wolf was trying to make a comeback. The population had dropped to 100 by the time a settlement was reached between the environmentalists and the NCWRC. Spotlight hunting at night was outlawed, and hunters were required to carry a permit for coyote hunting during daylight hours. But the number of wolves continued to dwindle, reaching a concerning low population estimate of 17 to 20 in 2020 and 2021. There has been a steady decline in red wolves born in the wild from 2008, which saw 47 new wolves to only 4 pups in 2018. Fish and Wildlife didn't report a single red wolf birth in the wild in 2019, 2020, or 21, which is why the recent litter of 6 is such exciting news to conservationists and wolf enthusiasts alike. As of today, there are an estimated 15 to 17 red wolves living in the wild, another 241 exist in captivity. They continue to be one of the most endangered animals on the planet. Thank you for joining us for the April 27, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. I'm Karen Wheeler.